As April draws to a close, we catch up on all things touring cars in the opening month.
Hello and welcome back to the British Touring Car Podcast. We're going to bring you a new little series this year where we sum up everything from each month because you seem to have liked it in the pre-season. So we're going to bring you all the action from April. Start of the British Touring Car season. We are back and running again for 2026.
On my birthday.
Oh yeah, your birthday as well. Oh, wow. Yeah, you're another year older.
I'm another year older, not necessarily wiser, but another year older for sure.
But yeah, we've had plenty of action this month. We've had Media Day, we've had the opening round at Donington, and we've had a few little news stories interspersed in between. But we'll bring you up to date with the action first of all, and then we'll keep you up to date with the news at the end. So as you may or may not have seen, if you haven't already, go and have a look. But we went to Media Day.
We did.
Which was warm.
That was warm, yes. Very warm. That was warm. We got to see all the cars for the first time. We have done a more in-depth Media Day blog and includes two driver interviews. So if you haven't checked that already, now is the time to do so. We talked to Charles Rainford and James Dorling about their upcoming seasons. And we were able to go around the pit lane, try and see what all the cars looked like, notice who wasn't there as much as who was there. But yeah, it was a good start to the season. And of course, it did set some times in testing, which we maybe raised an eyebrow or two at, and then looked a little bit foolish when those times continued to top the boards at Bonington at the opening weekend.
Yeah, the BMW certainly looked quick through the testing period, taking new lap records at Croft and looking quick at Brands as well. And they were there or thereabouts for Donington. We obviously saw the brand new Mercedes get unveiled for Plato Racing. And if you haven't already, go and watch the late break show that Johnny Smith does. And also there's a Plato documentary as well.
Do you reckon Johnny Smith is promoting our podcast?
I doubt it.
No.
I very much doubt it.
You're welcome, Johnny. So he needs the viewers. Yeah.
which is actually quite interesting to see behind the scenes of how everything's getting set up and how Plato's not just going in to be there, he is being in there to be at the top.
Yeah, I'll confess, I haven't had time to watch it yet after having a holiday straight after at Donington Park, etc. It is my plan to catch up with it over the next couple of weeks, and I think it is our plan to bring some form of Plato review or do a too long didn't watch kind of thing, podcast style thing, perhaps in one of the early breaks in the season. Probably not wait till the summer break, but at least there's a couple of breaks between races, so we'll endeavour to get that too long didn't watch and get the key points covered for you.
Plato's his own enigma and deserves a podcast to himself, really, doesn't he?
Well, we have got a podcast all about Jason Plato, of course. We have got the Yvonne Muller Jason Plato Hollywood story. For fans who liked Rush and that kind of thing, we have done our own little deep dive on the classic year of Plato v. Muller at Vauxhall. So again, if you're looking for touring car content between, we've had a bit of a break between the first two rounds. If you're looking for something to scratch that itch, that video is still available on YouTube, and I think it's on Spotify as well.
Yes, it will be. So yeah, we saw that brand new Mercedes and Plato Racing unveiled, along with the brand new Audi for PMR, bringing three cars to the grid this year. And what a start they made.
Yeah, Donington Park, fresh out the box. You would say questioned whether the Audi could continue its testing form into race day. And it did, with bells on, taking a race win and leading it. They've got their top, their three drivers have taken up top 10 positions within the championship at the moment.
Yeah, certainly looks like a very promising season going ahead for them. And my Moffat call doesn't look too silly now, does it?
It doesn't. Can we chat Overboost for a moment or two? Because it has dominated the headlines a little bit. So for those who weren't aware, Daryl De Leon had a 5-second time penalty in the qualifying race sprint to pole thing, which we might have time to discuss a little bit more here in a moment. That put him back 5 seconds. And this is where I'm trying to get to the crux of the discussion, really, because we touched on it on the review show, but we've got more time here. Adam Morgan received a 5-second time penalty in round one for a overboost infringement. And Tom Ingram was disqualified from round one for, and I quote, a significant overboost infringement. I don't understand. No one seems to understand. What is your take on this at this juncture?
I really think we need it set out in stone as to what amount of boost is significant overboost and what is just a little bit overboost and what the limitations are, basically. Yes, okay, there are viewers out there and there are fans out there that don't want to know the ins and outs, but there are people there like you and I who want to understand what complications there are and why there can be this overboost in what looks like a software issue.
I was going to say, because as far as I can tell, nobody has delivered a explanation to your average trackside fan to how this can happen. Now, I completely understand what you're saying. Some people want to watch the racing, don't really care about the technical bits. However, I have seen fallout from this weekend of the conspiracy theory tin hats. Alan Gow is fixing the championship, blah, blah, blah. And what I will say is that whilst I think that is nonsense, by not actually explaining how this happens, why it happens, and what the differences are between an Ingram and a Morgan, you are only going to add fuel to those fires that of conspiracy, of foul play. You know, the touring cars has got very tribal. You are, you know, people firmly believe this is to try and get Sutton his fifth championship so early on. It's nonsense, but what I will say is that you can forgive and, if not forgive, at least understand where some of this feeling comes from when there's not been any other explanation other than, yeah, he overboosted, so he's disqualified. But he overboosted, but it's a little bit less, so it's fine.
There needs to be a lot more transparency regarding it.
Because Ingram didn't seem to really understand it either. Yeah. I mean, he's not going to come out and say, oh, yes, and give us a breakdown explanation. Yeah. But equally, if he's acting, he should be getting himself a part in a BBC mockumentary or a drama, because he genuinely seemed confused to what had gone wrong. Yeah. And to add even further problem, I'm sure that, and I might need to go back and watch this, I'm sure in qualifying, Tim Harvey said that the car could no longer overboost because it would kick it. The software was designed so if you did overboost, it would
drag it back effectively.
Yeah, to self-equalise during the race.
Yeah.
But that clearly cannot be the case. So no. Either Tim Harvey is wrong, which is a possibility, I accept.
That has been heard before.
Yeah, I accept, is a possibility. Or the rules haven't been correctly communicated, or the rules have changed again last minute, as we've seen with the Jack Sears, because nobody thought Osborne was in the Jack Sears until
not
suddenly.
Even sure Osborne was aware that he was in the Jack Sears.
Until suddenly, Osborne was back in the Jack Sears. So, yeah, I think that it needs clarity, because otherwise it's going to be something we're going to see throughout the season. And also, as well, we don't want championships decided by these technical infringers. And yes, Ingram was very fast in race one. That is fine.
Also, a massive setback with a disqualification from a race and then having to start at the back of the next race. Yes, okay, Sutton and Ingram have shown the skill at the Donington weekend of how they can just power through a field, even with the regulations that are currently in place. Yes, the green will always rise to the top and the best drivers will probably take the majority of the points throughout the season and be there vying for the championship. But the fact that he's had two races affected by it, we need more understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. And we also need to understand what constitutes bad and what constitutes less bad. Because,
yes, minimal.
You know, is it a case that Ingram's had the boost on the entire race? Mm-hmm. Or is it a case that he, there's just so many questions to ask. And as this is now playing such a key part in the championship, with every weekend, your boost allocation will change depending on where you are in the championship and where you finish races, etc. This really does need, making easy for fans to watch. Because I will say, and I think we've discussed this about, and I'm going to talk about this subject in a minute, everything this season seems so overly complicated for your average race day fan.
It does.
That it just feels like they have decided to make everything as difficult as possible. And it just, I'll bring up now, the Goodyear Award, the inaugural winner of the first round was Ash Sutton, fair enough. But already, the four drivers they picked caused uproar on social media because lots of people felt that certain drivers have been missed out who shouldn't have been. And okay, I don't think you can really argue Sutton deserved the award for the weekend as a whole. Obviously, took two wins and a podium. Yeah. Yes, he did very well. There's no doubt about that. But again, they made that so needlessly complicated that you've got this panel of experts, so-called experts, who pick four, and it goes to the fan vote.
The fact that it comes down to a fan vote in the end. Yes, okay, there are a majority of the fans out there that appreciate the racing and can see when a driver's had a good weekend and when they've had a bad weekend. But ultimately, it's a popularity contest.
But why can't they just cut out the middleman and go straight to the fan? In F1, they do that. Yep. And I would say that more often than not, they get the driver of the day right in F1. Yes. More often than not, there are sometimes you go, what? But generally, and actually, I've seen it in F1 before where, say, Verstappen has won the race by 30 seconds or whatever, he's still not driving the day because it's boring. Mm. So they've actually picked someone like Behrmann who's come through the field to finish sixth. Why can't we have, let's go straight to the fans. Why have we got to have this?
He had a brother in F4, you know.
He did. But again, they've just, I just think that they are, it's getting gimmicky and they are trying to pretend, I don't know about you, but it feels like they're just trying to copy F1 in every possible way at the moment, but saying we must add our own twist to it and making it complicated.
Yeah, if you have been living in a black hole, we have had the opening weekend at Donington, which Rust went through the penalties for there.
There is more penalties.
Okay.
If I can quickly cover those off, or do you want to cover the race wins off first?
You go for that first.
Okay, so there was also a final penalty discussed in race three. Gordon Shedden received a 1.1 second time penalty and 3 penalty points on his licence for causing a collision and gaining an advantage in an incident involving Darrell De Leon and his door.
That was quite apt, wasn't it?
There could be no complaints. It was front of Toyota into rear quarter of BMW.
It wasn't even rear quarter, it was his driver's door that was caved in.
But there you go, into door of Coppice. BMW and sending De Leon slightly sideways. Very sideways. Cut and shut. In the touring cars, you're allowed a bit of contact in the touring cars for any new listeners. Well, I say you're allowed. Ideally, you're not, but some margin will be given. That is not a margin that is given. That is not a rub.
No, certainly not.
That is the police with the special red key at 4 a.m.
And as you mentioned, we have had a new format come into the touring car weekend. So we have had qualifying on a Saturday be adapted and changed from what it was last season. And then we also have what they call qualifying race, but they like to phrase it as a race to pole, mm-hmm. and you like to phrase it as something different.
I have done some reflection on this because we have had feedback, and it's fair. It's a game of opinions that perhaps have been a little bit harsh on it. I'm prepared. I think that in principle, it could be quite fun. However, I still can't get over that the 30 minutes to precede it are going to be dull as dishwater for the rest of the season.
Yeah. So
it might be necessary evil. And if the sprint to pole race event thing, there you go, to give it its full name, continues to give interesting results. Mm-hmm. I don't think it will, by the way. I think that the novelty will wear off after a couple of rounds and drivers will play it safe and safe and safer. But let's assume that it does stay fun. Then, okay, that could be a necessary evil. But yeah, I was completely against it at the start of the season. I've moved slightly more into, and we'll see whether we go back to completely against it.
So yeah, we have 2 15-minute qualifying sessions set by the odd and even finishing order from the 40-minute practice session in the morning. That then sets the fastest group set one side and the slowest group on the other side. Then sets the grid basically for the race to pole. And then whoever wins that race to pole and the grid order that finishes in, subject to penalties, which we saw, will then start race one on Sunday, back to a more regular format from pole position, and we take the weekend from there, as we would have done in the last few seasons.
Agreed.
So qualifying was topped by Tom Ingram this weekend. The qualifying race was then won by Dan Rowbottom, courtesy of a 5-second penalty to Tom Ingram. But he did only win it by 24 thousandths of a second in the end.
Yes, that penalty was for an out-of-position start.
It was. And then on to race one. It was taken by Mikey Doble in the end, following further penalties.
Ingram being disqualified, as we just discussed. Yes. Yep.
from Ashley Sutton from Charles Rainford. Race two, we then had Ash Sutton win. From Dan Camish from Gordon Shedden. And then race three, the reverse grid, we again had Ash Sutton win from Tom Ingram from Ricky Collard.
Agreed. Right. There's been a little bit of fallout following the race.
Certainly.
Following an incident that occurred in race one. Was it the qualifying race? My apologies, yep. Qualifying race.
Where Sutton had a little to do.
Yes. That was controversial enough.
That was controversial enough, yeah. Sutton went for a gap that was certainly closing on Ingram in going on to the second lap of the qualifying race. Dropped a wheel on the dirt, slid across the face of his teammate, Camish, who had to take avoiding action, and actually ended up in the gravel at the entry to Redgate.
Yes.
The incident as a whole was quite exciting at the mm-hmm. time and controversial, but the recovery of that incident is where we've had plenty of discussion on our social media.
Yes, we have. So this all started with let's go through what actually happened first of all. So the Sutton was stricken just in the gravel trap as you exit the corner, about mid corner, and he was fairly close to the racing track edge, so he wasn't up towards the fence. It was a small off, but he was beached, so he had to be recovered. This meant that they had to call a snatch vehicle, which was they have a license for, as I understand it, and Sutton was snatched from the side of the circuit. However, we had this section covered by double yellow flags, yep. and we had double waved yellow flags, I should say,
to signify that there are marshals on track recovering a vehicle,
and the flag means slow down and be prepared to stop.
Yep.
And we had 2 laps of the cars coming past the incident while it was being cleared. I think it's fair to say that slow down and be prepared to stop means different things to different drivers.
Yeah, it doesn't necessarily enter the head of a race driver with a helmet on. We've discussed this many times over as to what we feel is sufficient for drivers to slow under yellows and the actions that they should be taking. And we've been fairly vehement in disagreeing with some actions of some drivers. Mm-hmm. And there was an article that followed.
Yes, so Tom Chilton spoke to Motorsport News. I won't read the whole article, but I shall just do some quotes here. So he said, and I quote, "I had an 8-ton digger right in front of me with a car on it, and I was screaming on the radio, 'Don't you remember how Jules Bianchi died?'" Jules Bianchi was an F1 driver who had an accident at Suzuka where a car was being recovered. He left the circuit, I believe it was raining.
Yeah, in severely wet conditions.
And slammed head-on into the recovery vehicle. Unfortunately, was killed as part of the impact. I was wondering why they hadn't put out a safety car. I said that twice in a row whilst I was going out flat. Sorry, while I was going flat out staring at a digger. I'll return to that in a minute.
One thing I would also say is when we were watching it live mm-hmm. on YouTube, as you can every Saturday, we thought straight away that should be a safety car and recover the vehicle under controlled circumstances.
Yeah, and this is Tom Chilton would go on to say, and this is basically a point that I've been drumming. And actually, to be fair, you normally laugh at my soapbox, but you join me on this one.
Yeah.
Tom Chilton further added, "All it takes is debris going on the brakes or something, the brake pedal going long, and you're in trouble. You are going straight into the digger. I am really cross at the championship officials." Now, I will say he's not helped his case by saying he was going flat out into the corner, because you shouldn't be going flat out into the corner because you're under yellow flags. However, we put this up onto our social media on our Facebook page, and feel free to go and have a look through the comments. Some very constructive comments, yep. Some very good arguments for and against. And a lot of people that have come out against our view have said, well, Tom shouldn't be going flat out. I agree. But that highlights our point in a nutshell, is that the safety car... The safety car takes out all possibility or all grey area. You slow down to the safety car speed.
Yep.
Yellows, you could slow 5 miles an hour. The guy behind you might slow 30 miles an hour. It's, to a degree, it is a perception to how fast you think you should be going through that sector.
And one thing that a lot of people have actually mentioned, and this harps back to an incident that happened at the Nürburgring as well mm-hmm. over that weekend, is that a driver unfortunately lost his life due to possibly drivers not adhering to yellow flag scenarios. Yes, there is also fluid down on track as well. But a code 60... is where you basically, it's not like the virtual safety car that you would have in F1, where everyone around the track has to slow down to a certain maximum speed, basically.
Yep.
It brings the race under a lot more control, and it means, or it should mean, that people can't gain or lose anything within that area.
Yeah, you have a delta time you're not allowed to exceed.
Exactly.
On that point, I apologise for any mispronunciation. Alexander Koshahov was disqualified from the ADAC 24-hour Nürburgring qualifiers, lost his DPN licence after he was clocked going 201 kilometres an hour in double yellow flags and 192 kilometres an hour through a code 60. So that's the point, is that, okay, you could say that that's a bad example, but that you only need one bad example. Mm. That is why, for me, and this is the point I've made continuing the social media debate, don't put it in the hands of drivers who are going to use discretion. Put it in the hands of the clerk of the course and yep. the safety car driver to set the speed through that section. Yep. And don't get me wrong, even under a safety car, something can still go wrong. I'm not saying that. And
at least you're at a lot lower speeds where the consequences are likely to be less.
Yeah, the only other option is to completely red flag it to remove the vehicle, which I think is potentially excess, unless it's raining. If it's raining, I don't think there's any argument. You red flag, in my opinion, you should be red flagging it and you should be getting it sorted. But yeah, it has caused debate. It's caused interest. I've seen quite a few different suggestions, different arguments that I hadn't necessarily thought of. And that, I think on the whole, the Facebook thread conversation has been very respectful and very constructive, which is always nice to see. But yeah, we'd be interested to know what your thoughts on that are, whether you are firmly in the Chilton and our camp of why you're taking a risk, or if you think that if drivers feel this way, they should look at their own actions first. And I think there's somewhere in the middle on that.
Yeah, there's definitely got to be compromise from both sides. But paramount to everyone's safety is the marshals at the track, along with the drivers that are on the circuit. Otherwise, if we don't have either of those, we don't have any racing at all.
Can I make a really cynical point as well?
Cool.
If that's races 1, 2, or 3, it's a safety car. It's because it's a sprint race, so they don't want to lose time under it.
Yep.
I'm cynical.
Yeah.
But I reckon if that's races 1, 2, or 3, it's a safety car.
Yeah. No, I can see your point of view from that.
Obviously, that is on my opinion. It is not fact. But yeah, we saw the safety car utilised in two of the three races over the weekend. So yeah, for me.
And we lost a lot of time over that weekend due to safety cars in other formulas mm-hmm. as well. And sometimes the schedule does have to compress and allow for those bits and pieces. And unfortunately, it didn't look like the marshals got much of a lunchtime that weekend.
However, knowing marshals like we do, I think they'd prefer a shortened or no lunchtime than having to extract somebody from mm-hmm. a car that has hit a safety vehicle or trying to get a marshal into the back of an ambulance who's been hit by a car going off track under yellow flag. So, safety should always be the number one paramount. And unfortunately, as you mentioned, with the Nürburgring same weekend, motorsport is dangerous. Mm-hmm. And it was a tragic reminder of how dangerous it can be.
Yep. Is. If you haven't already, do let us know your thoughts on the Donington weekend and Media Day. And we've got one other little snippet of news.
And it is only really a snippet, but
that may interest you for the season to come. So it does look like there's been a news article released that suggests that WSR, still having a third license, may look to possibly fill it at some point this season.
Yeah, so we know they've got a third car because we've seen it ourselves at Media Day in the back of the truck. So my theory on this would be that if they couldn't get a third driver, they'd use it as a spare car for potentially chassis. Turkin had a car completely written off a couple of years ago at Alton Park and for spare parts. However, they have got that car, and if they can get a deal over the line, they have said that they'd be looking to run it. The problem is, it always comes down to his dollar. Who is going to find the money to run it? Stephen Jelly is in the Porsches, so and he could, of course, leave the Porsches and come back to the touring cars, but he was a leading candidate. There's been some suggestions that he might look to run a development driver, but development drivers don't tend to have the budget because they're an early part of their career.
I very much a development driver would be running a now independent team as well. Yes, I know that WSR have done a lot for bringing drivers through and into the sport, especially over the amount of years and decades that they've been here. But with the situation that they're in and how we understand it, the lack of BMW backing, I don't think they'll be able to afford to.
This is the point. BMW aren't going to put their own development driver in there because they're no longer really involved. Yep. So it's a tricky one. I say, unless they can do a deal with a BMW driver from a GT program to maybe come across and fill the seat, but it costs a lot of money to go racing.
I think at most, the earliest we would see that car is the start of the second half of the season. We already know that Ricky Collard, being one of the drivers on the grid currently, has only got a deal for half a season at his current team. So there are deals to be had for certain drivers, and we've seen it throughout the last few decades that drivers will pop in and out of the sport, whether it's for half seasons, three races, or three weekends, three races. It does happen.
However, it is worth reminding that the rules are the TBL can only be filled by a maximum of, is it two drivers for a season? Two changes. So, I mean, they could potentially look to loan two off the seemingly defunct One Motorsport who hold licenses, and they could potentially therefore get another two off them and run those and keep the revolving door drivers going. However, I don't really see how that helps them anyway, to be fair. If you're going to run it as a development car or as a development driver, you really want one, maybe maximum of two in there, to otherwise you're not going to get any data, you're not going to get anything meaningful because the cars can be changed every weekend.
No, agreed. I think that pretty much brings us up to date with everything that's happened in April so far.
I think so.
If we have missed anything, let us know down in the comments, as we'd like to know all the news that is going on. Yeah, feel free to discuss anything that we've mentioned down below as well.
Absolutely. We'll be back with a Brands Hatch preview next week, Bank Holiday week, is it? Yep. We are also going to Brands Hatch when we get the tickets booked.
That's right, I've been paid now.
Obviously. But we'll be going to Brands Hatch. We'll cover that more off in the preview. And anyone that watched the Donington Park review for the first time, it will be completely different for the Brands Hatch review because I'm not going on holiday.
Do let us know your thoughts on that, though, because it was a lot different.
It was a lot different. Yeah, I mean, maybe you liked it. Maybe you really enjoyed the format change and the different way we did it. If you did, let us know. But because we can always do the same on the way home from Brands. But the plan is to go back to the reviews styles we had for last year, unless the sway of public support suggests we should do otherwise.
Yeah, but until then, we'll see you soon.
Bye for now.